If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
We say things that don't mean anything, but thanks for listening.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to We Say Things, episode 228. Suns fan here with the bearded legend himself, Cinder Man.
You also have a beard, sir. It is not... It is not a one beard show.
That's true. Thank you so much.
Nice introduction voice. I liked it.
Thank you for joining us today. Can we speak to our beautiful patrons from the In Bruges tier?
Wow, you suddenly sound like AI. How'd that happen?
Thank you to dear Mr. Gaben. Please bring TI to Brazil next. Yours truly, Captain Broccoli. STGC Daniel, humbled bookmaker, recommends Relic Arena. Please do a belch instead of reading this name. I can do a burp on command, but it's just, there's no point if it's not a belch, I feel like.
And you also read the name.
Mister, I love the NBA segment. Lovely that James Harden is practicing defense on his friend Kawhi. That was one of the funniest clips I've ever seen, actually.
Is that how you pronounce that name?
Yeah.
K-A-W-H-I is pronounced Kawhi.
Yeah.
No, that's K-A-W-A-I-I.
It's a different type of Kawhi, yeah.
Okay. So you're saying this guy's not Kawhi?
No. He's definitely not, no. Well, it depends on your perspective, I guess. Pepperballs, T-Coil, Q-Ludes is ready to praise the podcast, Lab Dota, Yatoro does it again, Cinderin, Magdev, Disco Farm D, the Mega Pope, and Zan Xavier.
And also thank you to NateThicko01, Hamscroats,
nice.
SharkTM, Janie, Dop, Nothing to See Here, Je suis Ivremont, Ben Broomhead loves the NBA segment, Wooden Aftertaste, Anonymous, Venus is the only planet in our solar system that rotates clockwise, Mr. Niebling.
Wow, that's a sexy voice and a sexy trivia stat, whatever you want to call it. Thank you.
I love the solar system. I just want to fuck it, you know? All right.
Wait, there's some planets that don't rotate in our solar system, right? Aren't there a couple? Maybe next week, Niebling can illuminate us. What?
No, all planets rotate.
I don't know if that's true for our solar system, but in general, that's definitely not 100% true.
Well, Mr. Niebling wrote it here, so that is true.
Okay.
All rotate in our
solar system. Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. So only one is clockwise. That is interesting.
So as always, thanks to all our patrons. Mm. These are the In Bruges tier patrons, but thanks to all of you guys, of course. And if you want to be a patron for the podcast, you can go to patreon.com/wesaythings.
Yes.
To chip in and continue the show rolling as it has for how long now?
Four and a half years? Too long, I think.
Yeah. 5 years?
I think probably it's time. 5 years. It's probably time we end it.
Yeah. Been a good run. 228 is a good one to end on.
Yeah, that's a really important
number. It's the name of one of the pistols in CS.
Is that true? A 228 caliber gun? I mean, it's definitely.
I'm gonna Google.
P250, you mean?
P228.
Is there a P228?
Can you not buy that in CS?
Is that the shit one? Game? I mean, maybe it is. Some dog shit.
SIG Sour P228, Counter Strike Online Wiki.
Sour?
Huh?
Anyway, we can move on to. It's been a while. People have been asking for the NBA segment, so we're going to give them something. And I'll tell you why we haven't had an NBA segment, Cinderin.
Okay.
So. The Suns fucking suck. That's part of it. I've been very disinterested. So let me just explain to you how things are going.
or what my life has been like the last however many years. So I've been a Suns fan my entire life, as you know, as far back as I can remember. When I was 7 years old, this is going to eight. You're going to see how old I am. When I was 7 years old in 1993, I went to the Chicago Bulls versus Suns Game 6 NBA Finals. I was 10th row center. And obviously we lost, and it was still to this day a core memory, okay? But mm-hmm. we lived in the Middle East at that point, and this is back where before there was internet, back before we had like NBA League Pass or anything like that. So only games we could get were games that somebody recorded for us or something mm-hmm. that was on like national TV, which was pretty rare, okay, back in the day. So I wouldn't be able to watch that many Suns games. But we moved to the U.S. in 1995, and that is when I was able to watch the Suns every single game. And I did. Every single game from 1995 till now, basically, I've watched all the games. But
wow,
there's a caveat here. There was 1 year, I can't remember which one, there was a year like probably 7, 8 years ago, when I don't know, whenever it was, Devin Booker was on the team. He was relatively new. Our lineup was so fucking pathetic. Just no hope. After like half the season, which is like 40-something games, I stopped watching that season, okay? So it's about half a season I didn't watch. And then when you get to this season, I have only been watching if we win because, and that's the first time ever, other than this one anomaly, because
so you don't watch live.
I have not been watching it because I got so angry when we lost to the Lakers and I was watching live. I'm like, this is not good for my health. And this okay. team that is supposed to be a super team has made me hate them. They are so unenjoyable to watch. I have never, like, even when we sucked ass, other than, again, that one anomaly year, there's something like, oh, this guy's developing. There's something. They are so frustrating to watch because on paper, they should be way better than they are. Feels like they're not trying half the time. Feels like our coaching staff is dog shit. Like, I don't know what the issue is, but it has been the worst. So I'm just biding my time, watching the games that we win, like, mm-hmm. which feels kind of bad. That's very unlike me until the playoffs start, and then I'll be watching live, and then we'll see what happens.
Oh, so you're guaranteed playoffs?
No. I mean, that's the thing is, like, the Western Conference is so stacked, it's unbelievable how stacked it is. It's never been like mm-hmm. this before. Right now, we are seventh. Technically, seventh through tenth do that play-in thing to see who make okay. two of those teams make the playoffs. So if you're top six, you're guaranteed. Seven through ten have to do like some crazy best of one like play-in situation, which is scary, which we're
are
in
right
now.
Are you close to sixth?
We are half a game from sixth, yes. So
okay.
Like,
so
the difference between the fourth rank and us is 2.5 games. Like, it is.
And how many games are left?
There's like 13, 14 games left.
Okay.
So things can definitely change.
You can easily make it down to 11.
Well, that one, actually, yeah, it is possible. There's a team that's won over 10 in a row now that is ninth, or that is 11th. So it's insane. An insane
year. Would
you
rather just bomb out now or go to the playoffs and lose round one?
Ooh, that's a good question. I don't know. Usually I would say, okay, like if you have a young team, it's okay if you lose in the first round, some experience. But if you otherwise, you're like, all right, we might as well take a chance at the lottery for the draft. But this year, it's like we have nothing. We have no draft picks, I don't think. We've maxed out everybody's contract. Like, we have no flexibility on the roster. So it would be a disaster either way. So okay. I don't know. It's bad. So that's the NBA segment. Probably last time until the playoffs, and then I'll start ramping it up again. Appreciate it.
I don't believe you. People love the NBA segment, Shannon. They want it to come back every week.
Yeah, I know.
I am not one of those people. As a matter of fact, I'm not people.
Yeah, that's
and that's why I don't enjoy it.
Yeah. Thank you, Sindarin.
You're welcome.
So, obviously we had a guest on last week's episode, Mr. Purian Flax. If you guys missed that episode, check it out. One of our best. We say that about every guest episode because we just don't have the heart to tell our guests when the episode
it's
sucks.
One of our best episodes ever because it's a guest episode.
Yeah, when we're
the top 20 are all with guests.
Anybody we can just add to the mix is going to probably make it a little bit better. But As a result, we missed some news from last week, so this is going to be a little bit old, but we need to discuss some of it. Two different conversations. There's a 7.35D, which we'll talk about after this, and then the matchmaking features, which were very interesting. Since I've been talking so much, Senator, why don't you discuss what they did from the matchmaking, from the band perspective? There's a nice little update.
Have you played ranked?
Not ranked, but...
Okay, so I'm just... Does this matchmaking work in unranked too?
Yes.
Okay. Because the reason I ask is that it doesn't work in Immortal Draft, so this change does nothing for my games. So I haven't seen it in action.
Interesting.
I think I haven't seen the stream where it happens, but... Okay, so the two core things that have happened is, number one, in order to... Following all the drama and the problems that there were with Overplus that we covered some weeks ago, where people could get information and take advantage of it to access people's profiles even though they were hidden, and then ban their best heroes to increase their own win rate, which is effectively just flat out cheating. Valve did a honeypot at the time where they found a way to figure out who was using it and then not letting them know that they knew, and then did a massive ban wave to cut off a ton of people using that cheat. Since then, Overplus have said that they're gonna, you know, reinvent themselves and make it better, blah blah blah. Effectively, they're just waging war on Valve over this whole cheating thing and playing the victim, which I find really weird. If you're gonna make a cheat, at least own it, you know. I mean, it's like, yeah, you fucking know you're doing something wrong, you know. Don't fucking play the victim. Anyway, what Valve did to try to combat this, aside from obviously doing the ban wave, they have this approach to bans themselves now. This is Dota bans, so heroes. In the past, when you loaded into a game, you would be banning, every player could nominate one hero for a ban, and it would be a 50-50 whether the hero got banned or not. And you could not nominate the same hero twice. It was always a coin flip. And then after those, what would that be? 0 to 10 bans came out. The rest of the roster would be banned with popular heroes, so that less popular heroes got more play. Up to 16 total heroes would be, or a total of 16 heroes would be banned every game. That is still the same. There's 16 bans every game. But now, instead of having a 50-50 on your bans that you nominate in the beginning of the game, you can now set 4 bans in your profile, and you will be banning those heroes every game heading in. They each have a chance to get banned, which is escalating. So if more people have selected the same hero, that hero is more likely to get banned, up to, I believe, 93%. If all 10 players nominate the same hero, that hero has a ridiculously high chance of being banned. So that's that change, which I think is a pretty elegant solution to the problem, where now people can't target specific players as hard. This is not only about the cheat. It's also about, people having a higher chance of playing heroes that they like, potentially, and being less directly counterable in the draft. If you're a player who's very known for playing two heroes, then generally speaking, especially in the higher ranks, people would just try to ban both heroes against you and also prepare for you to pick them, so they start counterpicking early. Now there's other options with this ban system, so I think it's pretty interesting. That's the one thing.
So wait, is this part in matchmaking for Immortals?
The bans are.
Okay.
Yeah. This is account wide. This is every account has this option. You can ban 1 to 4 heroes. If you choose fewer than 4 in your profile, which you can, it does not increase the odds of the other heroes getting banned. It's the same either way. The second thing, which I haven't personally seen in action, is the pre-match matchmaker analytics. I think this is for everyone, right? This is not.
No,
it's Dota Plus.
But yeah. I think, as far as I could tell,
you should explain this one because you've seen it more, right?
If you have Dota Plus, it's automatically activated, but technically it's in, if you go to options, it's in the Dota Labs tab. Okay.
Yeah.
But it is automatically selected, but you can disable it if you want. But essentially it comes up with a bunch of information once your queue has popped up. So you'll see which server it's in. You'll see the skill range. So for all players, it'll say like moderate. For your party, it could be close to the skill range. So you can see, like, obviously, if it takes a long time to queue, then it'll be more imbalanced. It's about whether mm-hmm. you want to stick to the queue longer to get better matches or not. And then, like, for behavior score, it'll show, like, how the people that you're going to be playing against or your team potentially match up against what you're used to. So you can see if you're playing against a bunch of shitty ass racist mm-hmm. or something like that, so you can just re-queue again. So that's the option. You can re-queue again, or once you see that information, give you the confidence to hit accept. So just more information.
Yeah.
No downsides that I can think of, other than that it's Dota Plus right now.
Yeah, so I think the discourse around this, the primary downside that some people were complaining about was that their queue times got longer because people kept pressing queue again if the conditions weren't stellar.
Mm.
Where beforehand you would get games. So that's obviously the trade-off, and Valve know this. This is why they're testing it the way that they are, is that how much is this going to actually affect queue time? How patient are people? What does this mean that the average game gets formed 25% slower? Does it mean the average game gets formed around the same time because most people just accept, you know? The average queue time should absolutely go up with this, because if even, you know, if parties start queuing again, it will delay things. Correct me if I'm wrong, Han had something somewhat similar to this with, I don't know why I know this because I never played the game, but it just seemed like I remember hearing about some sort of slider where you could choose faster game versus higher quality. Is that correct?
I don't remember. That's been a while.
It's like on one end of the scale, it was give me the fastest game possible. And on the other end of the scale was I'm willing to wait longer for the game to be more balanced or something like that, which effectively would be another way of implementing something like this. But this one just shows you what you are about to get. Whereas in the other one, it was just a setting, right? Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know why.
I mean, it sounds familiar. I just don't remember from Han specifically. I feel like I've played a game.
Yoda has never had it. I know that.
This is obviously different because it's not something you're setting the options. You're not doing it beforehand. Yeah. This is after the fact. But yeah, I think it's interesting. I think it's a win-win mostly. You said it doesn't work for Immortals, so irrelevant for the high end.
It doesn't work for Immortal Draft. I think it works for other Immortals, right? So when the game is, I think it's still 7,500 MMR or higher, then it's Immortal Draft instead of regular Immortal.
Okay, gotcha. And then one thing I want to mention about that I noticed, at least with the bans, the change actually makes the draft way faster. To the point where I was taken aback, because I'm used to being able to, like, offlaner typically chooses second phase, right? But you have mm-hmm. time to think through the bans. Okay, once it gets banned, all the bans go through, you can see what heroes are available, you know, discuss with your team if needed. But now it's just super fast, so it's just going to take some getting used to. But I mean, overall, that's probably a good thing, I guess.
Yeah, for sure. I think anything that cuts down on quote-unquote dead time in pub games is good, right?
Yeah.
It's just most people, like, it's also another thing is a lot of people don't really care about the draft that much, even in their own game. I think a lot of people just want to play, right? So it's just for all of those people, this is just flat out faster. And for the people that care a lot more about the draft, well, you need to adapt to the new circumstances and be faster. You need to be quicker at analyzing, and also perhaps go into the game a little bit more premeditated with a plan of how you want to play. Like, okay, what role am I expecting to get? What hero am I going to play if I get my role? What hero am I going to play if I don't get my role, etc.? So I think, you know, it just becomes a skill in itself, and I personally don't have any problems with that. I think it's
something I don't think you mentioned. One little small thing with the four bans, you're guaranteed to get one of them.
Right. One of your four bans will be banned, guaranteed. Yes, correct.
So, yeah, interesting change. I mean, a lot of these... that's the thing, though. Like, I wonder if... Do you think this changes the amount of times we're going to see heroes that are just universally hated? Does this... Like, what's the percentages on that? Like, the Arc Wardens of the world, Tinker when it's, you know, popular, etc.
So, for example, in the old system, a hero would be 50-50 in every game, right? Any given hero would be 50-50 if it was nominated or if it was popular. Now it escalates up to 93% if everybody nominates it. So let's say there's a meta where you're just like, fuck Meepo, you know? Like, this hero's just being picked every game when possible. It's way too strong. The community will self-regulate in its given MMR bracket, which is kind of interesting because now instead of, you know, maybe in Immortal versus in Archon, there's like a hero that's considered good in both brackets, but in Archon, you know, somebody will nominate it in every game because they're just kind of fed up with it, but not everybody thinks it's stupid. And then maybe in Immortal, there's just a hero that's an absolute pestilence, so nobody wants to play against it. And then that's going to be banned 9 out of 10 games. Which is both a good and a bad thing, because it means that everybody in that game does not want to see the hero, but at the same time, let's say 9 out of 10 people want to ban it, and the 10th player, it's their favorite hero. They used to be able to play it half the games, now they get to play it a tenth of the games.
Right.
I think that's the biggest downside with this, and I personally would be a fan of capping the chance a hero gets banned at, like, let's say 75%, so that the people who have their favorite hero be super meta aren't just cut from playing the game the way they enjoy it for months, right?
Right.
It's a bit... that's the biggest downside, also, and the only one, in my opinion, of the system.
I mean, they probably used some of the banning analytics from before as well, but I feel like this is more targeted now to the point where balancing the game, like from a Valve perspective, just looking at the stats of this, probably be pretty interesting to figure out what heroes people fucking cannot stand.
Yeah, you get some good data on, on community opinion on hero balance or on what's fun, right? It gives you stats, but I think Valve should definitely be very careful with just looking at, oh, this hero is getting banned 85% of the games, it's overpowered. That does not necessarily need to be the case, right? In some of the lower brackets, for example, I think Pudge has a very high ban rate, but at least he used to be banned way more in lower brackets than he was in Immortal, and the hero is not good. So it's just whether people think it's fun. It's whether there's always this X factor with, oh, this hero gets picked when people don't get their role and they can't play it, but they just want to play Pudge because at least it's fun, and then they lose, right? So people don't want to have to deal with that, blah, blah, blah. So there's going to be outliers, but you're right. I think the analytics can be useful, but I just think you can't just take them as an accurate representation of how good the heroes are. But you can take them as a pretty accurate representation of what the bracket thinks is fun, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is definitely should be a balancing factor, right? You want people to have fun. It's a video game. So if heroes get banned a lot, they're probably annoying for most players. Like, imagine old techies with this ban system. I think that hero, I genuinely believe in a lot of brackets, that hero would be 80% plus banned every game.
Yeah.
In the system, the old techies would.
As opposed to 100%. So that would have been a good
indication.
As opposed to 100% now, because it doesn't exist anymore, right?
Techies?
The original techies.
Oh, yeah, of course. Sure. But yeah, that would have been an interesting example of what does the community think about said hero. Because techies wasn't overpowered. People just thought it was really fucking annoying. Mm. So they were banning it a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, they end the blog post. So it's a really long blog post with all the cool features that they added and a little tiny footnote at the end. Onward, we know many of you are looking forward to Crownfall, and we're looking forward to getting it into your hands. We're wrapping things up and expect to release in mid-April. We'll see you then. So the community has been, they've been going crazy up until this point. Because Valve, for some, like, this is where the whole community manager thing would really be good, I feel like. But at this point, we're never going to be expecting it again. I'm not even going to ask for it. It's just common sense. And if they don't want to look at common sense, all the power to you, I suppose. But I feel like this could have been avoided. You know, this all this frustration. People just want to know if it's late, it's late. They're not going to, I feel like generally they won't get that upset about it. Just knowing when it's supposed to be coming instead of vague timelines, you know?
The thing that is, how to say, I understand from a fundamental standpoint why they don't want to put themselves... I mean, it's a luxury to have, first and foremost. This is not something most game studios can just do and be like, we'll just release it whenever it's ready. But Valve don't have any stakeholders. They can do it whenever they want.
Mm.
If... I get that if you're in that position, that you don't want to put pressure on yourself and you rather prioritize releasing stuff in high quality than rushing it out to meet a deadline. And I think the downside to what you're talking about with just say when you think it's coming out is, well, what if you're delaying it 3 or 4 times? Then what's the community perspective going to be then? Are they going to be like, wow, you guys are fucking lazy, just get it done already, when you're hard at work trying to make something really, really good, and then the reception of it is going to be tainted by everybody's frustration that you're late for your third deadline, which isn't a deadline. I think Valve's perspective, this is not a Dota thing. This is a Valve thing for every game they do. They don't make promises about dates for a reason, that they have internally over the years, the way they make games, come to the conclusion that the pressure and the community backlash when things aren't released on time isn't worth it compared to just letting the result speak for itself. And I agree. I mean, I understand why people think it's frustrating. And I think there's definitely probably some sort of middle ground where you don't give an exact date, but you're like, this game will, or this patch will be coming out within 2 to 4 weeks. And then people are like, how can you have such a big span? But then at least you give yourself a buffer, right? And then people are going to be happy if it's out in 2 weeks. And if it's out in 4 weeks, well, you told them it could take a while.
Yeah.
But then what if it takes more than 4 weeks, right? Then you've promised it's coming out in 4 weeks and you personally aren't happy with the product you're putting out, but you have to.
Well, it's just funny. They just want to avoid that. It's ironic that there was jokes that, oh, Valve's not even going to come out with Crownfall. Instead, it's going to be a letter patch. And most people are like, surely. I mean, was considered the joke. That's a meme. And it ended up being a reality, which is even more hilarious. But I mean, well, I understand to be fair, from like
this wasn't just a letter patch, though.
That's true. Well, that's the thing. So here is my question, right? And I do believe, just there's no proof behind it. This is just my belief. This was used to appease the community. This was probably the matchmaking and the ban thing that's probably supposed to be for this Crownfall update, I would imagine, right? And they probably just, they took parts of it and put it as a shiny little thing in front of the community with this letter patch that would have made...
So that it wasn't just a letter patch? So, I mean, that's absolutely possible.
Imagine, just imagine they just came out with a letter patch.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think people, because nobody's really raging very hard on Reddit, I mean, which is the place that we're looking for all this feedback, right? Mm-hmm. So it worked if that was the case, and it's actually really smart, which means this update for Crownfall must be fucking enormous, because the matchmaking and the ban thing is pretty freaking nice.
Yeah, these are some big quality of life changes, in my opinion. I don't know how much work it was. I mean, it's one thing to make big changes to the game in the sense that they have a big impact, but that doesn't necessarily translate to a lot of man hours. Like, changing the ban system to this, I don't know how elaborate that is, but I would think compared to a lot of other quality of life stuff they've put in the game, this is... A lot of the burden with this is with the idea and figuring out how to implement it well rather than the coding itself would be my guess. Compared to some of the other stuff they've put in the game. But yeah. Yeah, I mean, at this point, now this says mid-April. If I had to guess, that's probably April 14th to 20th. Most people would see mid-April and think April 14th to 16th. But I think it's unlikely to come out before the middle. And I think it might be a little bit after the middle. And that's because it's Valve. And I personally... do not have a problem with that. I would way rather, we've talked about this to death with video games in general. I prefer the devs take their time to make it good rather than push it for the sake of it. And that is a problem that so many other games have that I think perhaps people don't appreciate enough in Dota is the value of having the option to do this. I've played many different video games that, in my opinion, were released half a year too early, but they had to release. And in the end, it probably hurt them.
Yeah.
Because they could have that extra half a year of polish could have done so much for the original player reception and retention that you get over the next months when you drop a big game. So
that's right, Cinderin. Anyway.
Yeah.
So,
you want to look at the patch?
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Yeah, let's move on to the letter patch 7.35D. Which stuff do you want to talk about? I guess I can mention one of the big changes, because we cast a lot. A lot of games ended with Divine Rapiers because of the way that it works with Brooch. Because you get the spell amp now from Divine Rapier. Brooch will basically allow you to amplify your damage, your physical damage, because it becomes magical, which is then spell amped. Like, just absurd. So, saw it on Mars, saw it on PA, etc. So one huge change is Divine now gives a 100 damage bonus instead of 350. The first line is like, holy shit, they butchered this item, and you keep going. No longer provides spell amp by default. Now can be toggled between two modes. One gives you the extra 250 that you were missing. The other one gives you the 25% spell amp. Yep. A very Band-Aid type solution. This is like, let's just put a Band-Aid on this real quick, because this is a problem. This item's a real problem. And I'm sure that has killed Brooch now, I imagine.
You could even argue that this change wasn't necessary because of the other Brooch change, right? That they did in this patch, which is it can't crit anymore.
Yeah, that's true.
When you have Mars, Brooch active, you can't crit. So PA. The main heroes, the reason you had it on Mars and PA was that they had, in Mars's case, a guaranteed crit. And in PA's chance, a high probability crit for a ton of damage. So I don't know if they needed to do both things, but I'm very happy that they killed this build, because I think it was flat out just really stupid. And it says something when we watch some of the pro games that Mars has started planning for Rapier 10 minutes into the game. Like, you could tell that was their mindset, that they were going that direction. So good riddance. All right. Always a fan of this stuff. The neutral or the general update of this patch is very small, but it's three lines of slowing down the game. So less experience from stacking neutral camps and less gold for Mud Golems and Satyr Mindstealers. I would love to see a lot more in this vein. If you're going to keep the map as big as it is, make it less valuable, but make pushing high ground easier, which they did not do this patch. So effectively, this might slow down the game slightly more, even though it's already slow. In terms of winning, but a lot of the time the teams snowball quite fast and then can't finish. And I think it would be nice if the teams could snowball slower but win easier, if that makes sense. So I think this is one of the steps to do it, is make the just less gold on the map. We've heard multiple people talk about that, and I'm a big proponent of that. Okay, there's a lot of like small numbers changes. I don't know if you want to go over the like mainly the concept changes, because you've got like BKB 5 second longer cooldown, Scotty a bit more stats here and there. Let's focus on the ones that really change the item. So Helm of the Dominator and Helm of the Overlord now gives you gold when you dominate a creep, which is a really big change. This makes the items a lot more valuable, because not only do you get the creep like you used to, you no longer have to choose between do you want the bounty or the creep. You get both. And you can even, whenever you exchange your creep for whatever reason, it's just, it's efficiency, right? At the highest level, stuff like this matters. Like especially Helm of the Overlord. If you take a dragon, in the past, you were effectively sacrificing, is it 150 gold or something, to get that dragon? Now you get it and the dragon. So that's a quite valuable proposition suddenly compared to before.
Yeah, Miero's going to be really happy with that. The one person to play summons.
33 is going to be happy too.
Yep.
I think these items needed a buff, so I'm okay with this. The main downside to it is that it's bloat. So you're making this item better by generating gold out of thin air. So this goes against the concept that I was talking about with less gold on the map. So I do like that they get buffed, but I personally would have maybe liked to do it in a different way than just giving free gold. But it's good the items are a bit better. Let's see. I mean, so many small numbers tweaks, really.
Yeah, we don't need to go over that much. I know Light Collector is something that you wanted nerfed, and it did. So the movement
Grove
speed.
Grove lost 25 range. Really wanted that one nerfed or removed entirely. Honestly, I still think this item shouldn't be in the game. I'm warming up over the last couple of years. I've been warming up more to the idea of neutral items. I still am clearly not one of the biggest fans, but I think Valve have done, for the most part, a really good job at making them more fair. And oftentimes, making them more fair will make them flatter. That's just the result of trying to balance things around a very complex hero roster. Mm. Grove Bow, for me, is not it. I just think this item is stupid. Giving attack range as a free thing on a neutral item should not be a thing, in my opinion. Or at least it should be higher tier than tier 2. So I'm happy to see it nerfed, but honestly, I would have cycled it out, personally. But yeah, it's a step in the right direction. Every ranged carry was taking this item, or not every core, but every core that was using its attack as part of the key kit of the hero was taking Grove Bow. It was just too good. Light Collector got nerfed significantly, lost half its move speed bonus, and higher penalty on the regen. I don't know if this is an over nerf or not, but the previous one was way too good. 10% move speed was crazy. Now they're buffing Doubloon, which is basically an unpicked item in Pro Dota, more or less. They just give it more regen, which I don't think fixes the problem. I don't think this item is just mathematically good enough of the time. Conceptually, it's really interesting. When I saw the neutral items come out, I was like, holy shit, this one is crazy. But then when you look at what the numbers actually do in the game, it's not that much. So we'll see how they push that one forward. All right, heroes. Let's talk about the big meta heroes and what happened to them, right? So Batrider was mega popular at Dream League. Batrider loses damage per second on Flame Break on level 1, 2, and 3. And it loses a lot of duration. So effectively, Flame Break went from being a 5-second slow on level 1 with 10 DPS to now being a 2-second slow on level 1 with 25 DPS. So the damage on level 1 is the same, but the slow is way shorter. And this is obviously a really big deal for that hero. Let's see. I'm just going to quickly... Okay.
Chen.
Yep. Chen was the next obvious one. I guess Centaur lost some damage on the Stomp as well and a bit on the health regen talent on 10. It's worth noting. Changes like this to base key spells in this vein, especially a level 1 nerf from 90 to 70, is quite major.
Poor
that's
Centaur.
A pretty big nerf to Centaur. He was popular.
No buff to... The Ags, of course, the cart. Very sad.
And we're going
to
see that. I mean, yeah.
By the way, I don't know if anybody from Valve actually watches this. Mm-hmm. I would like to make another request. I've been making this request. I think we did it on a cast as well. Why has this not been fixed? Hoof Stomp should not be canceled by using Veil or Shivas. Why is that a thing?
Or Double Edge.
What do you mean? Does double edge
if you press
cancel?
Hoof Stomp and then press double edge, you cancel Hoof Stomp, I'm pretty sure. It's if you issue any command after starting Hoof Stomp, it gets canceled.
Well, that one makes more sense because it's a skill.
It's the only spell in the game that does that.
I'm okay with that because you're choosing between two spells. You can't cast both at the same time. That's a little weird. But
no, but if on other spells and other heroes, if you press an ability that has a wind-up time and then press a second ability, the first ability finishes and then you start the second one. On this one, if you press Hoof Stomp and then want to, you know, you're like, you want to really quickly double edge after the Hoof Stomp.
Yeah.
Then, or rather.
That's because you can
know,
move
whatever.
Around and it's not a very normal
It's a
skill.
Very special spell.
But
yeah.
I'm actually okay, believe it or not, with that being the case because it's skill to skill. But The whole Shiva's veil thing should not.
Yeah, with the items, it feels way worse because on those items, you're just used to them on every other hero not having that problem, right? It's a very Centaur specific issue.
Yeah.
Okay, Chen. Penitent Slow got nerfed on levels 2 and up by an insignificant amount, I would argue. And Divine Favor lost some armor. Went from 12 to 9 level 1, and then it goes plus 3 per level instead of plus 4 per level. I wanted to see this Divine Favor nerfed. I think it's still too good, honestly. And I think this hero is still going to be massively popular and did not get nerfed enough. That's my...
Yeah, the way that they worded that Chen got destroyed, it's basically what they implied. He had it coming, is how they worded it in the blog post.
I mean, he had the nerf coming, but not really.
I was looking at this like, it's not that much, really.
No, I don't think so either. I mean, Divine Favor was just a joke. Just clicking a button to give your ally 12 armor in the lane is insane.
9 armor, it's not that much different.
That's still a lot, you know?
Yeah.
It's definitely significantly less than 12 from... Also, when you think of when heroes get nerfed with the minus 1 armor, blah, 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 and people meme on it, this stuff definitely matters. But I honestly think this hero is still going to be banned every game at a pro level. I don't think this is enough to kill it off, but we'll see. scrolling.
I want to mention.
Want to highlight the disruptor change? Sorry?
Crystal Maiden, Crystal Clone costs 150 mana instead of 50. I think that's kind of a big deal because we've been seeing tons of players go for that shard to farm.
Yeah, or if they get it for free, just spamming it for wave clear and farming the jungle. Yeah, I think this is reasonable. That spell being 50 mana was actually ridiculous for how good it is. So. Mm-hmm. That's fine. Disruptor gets... So this is just a numbers change, but I think this one is significant enough that I want to mention it. His slow goes from 0.1 plus 0.1 per level to 0.4 on all levels on Thunderstrike. And this makes his laning significantly better. And as a result, we've actually seen in recent pro games, this hero has been relatively popular from being a very niche pick. The players that used to favor this hero are starting to run it again, also because him getting this buff and some other supports getting slight nerfs that were meta will start to push him up. And I love that. This hero is super fun to play. It's super fun to watch. It's awesome in pro games. It just really affects the dynamic of the game, and it creates moments, I would say. And heroes like that are always fun. So, okay. Dragon Knight was also a big meta pick. He loses 100 health on his level 15 talent, which was one of the best talents in the whole game, in my opinion. He just had a level 15 talent that gave him 400 health on a hero that has high armor was insane. Now it's 300, which is still very good. And the Elder Dragon form, this is a bit of an interesting way of nerfing this hero that I didn't think was going to be it, but... So illusions no longer apply the dragon's on-hit effects if they have reverted back to melee form. Which is only in, generally speaking, in a short duration of time, this is going to be relevant. And then the corrosive breath debuff duration is decreased from 5 to 3, which is the bigger one.
Yeah.
Because this means Dragonite is worse at taking towers. He can't just go and poke the tower every 5th second. He needs to do it every 3rd. And if you are playing, especially against the Frost Dragon, the slow isn't so excruciatingly long. You can get away and reset it. So I think that line makes a lot of sense and is a pretty meaningful nerf. I think the illusion one, not doing on-hit effects when they're melee, is just edge cases. That's going to be relevant. So, but good nerfs overall to that hero.
It's a little farther down, but I want to mention Pango. So this hero actually...
You don't want to mention Lifestealer?
Well, sure.
I mean, I guess the numbers aren't that significant, but this hero was super high win rate at Dream League. He suddenly became the pick of the tournament.
Yeah, that's true.
He loses 3% on all levels of Rage move speed, which is meaningful for sure, especially level 1 going from 9 to 6 is a massive cut. And then his Ag's cast range bonus on Infest is nerfed by 100. I don't think that one's as relevant.
Open
Wounds cast range goes from 800 to 600. That one's pretty big.
Come on now, Sindarin. Infest Ag's, very cool. I'm very good at using it. Definitely don't have a thread on Reddit right now about how bad. That actually was very noticeable, though. The 250 range only instead of 350.
Yeah. Oh, it's definitely a meaningful nerf. It's just, I personally thought the Ags was a little bit overbought in pro games.
Yeah, it was garbage.
And it still wasn't bought that much.
Yeah, it's garbage.
So, like, this isn't affecting that many situations, I think. Okay, where were we? Pango, yeah.
So Pango, they've been trying to nerf this hero. We talked about it all the time. You know, they come out with a minus this, minus that, whatever. The one thing they haven't touched, though, is the strike count has always been 4, if I'm not mistaken. They have finally reduced it to 3, which is interesting. I want to talk about that in just a moment, because this hero kind of fell off a bit, at Dream League at least. The only team that was playing it was Gaiman, and then once people stopped banning it, they stopped picking it as well. Like, nobody was playing this hero, I feel like. It was occasional pick, but the reason this is significant, now you get extra damage now per strike to make up for it, but the reason this is significant is because this makes defusal a lot worse. Like, what is that, 25% decrease in the procs now, so you're draining less mana. I don't know if this is enough for defusal to not be an item on Pango.
It is still the one build on the hero regardless,
which is sad, but because Maelstrom's really fun. Syndrome should try it sometime. Yep. This is a buff to the Maelstrom.
It's also a significant nerf to Basher on Pango.
That's true, yeah.
Because previously, I don't remember the math, but I think if you use Swashbuckle with Basher, you had like, I want to say it was like 3/4 of hitting a bash on your swash, which is crazy. Now it's significantly lower, especially because bash is pseudo-random. So the fourth swing, if the first 3 don't bash, the fourth would have very high probability, but now you don't get that for free, quote unquote. However, the damage of Swashbuckle is actually higher now on level 4 on the skill itself. It does 3 times 120, which is 360, up from 4 times 85, which is 340. So the base damage of the spell on the highest level is actually slightly higher. But it is significantly worse on level 1, where it went from 100 to 90. This might not sound like a lot, but it matters for securing range creeps in mid lane, for example. Which is obviously a huge deal the higher the level of the game is. I've still seen it a good amount. I feel like the hero is still good. He's still getting picked in pro. Just step by step becoming slightly, slightly less obnoxious. And what we should always remember is, if this is a nerf, but not a major one necessarily, if other meta heroes get nerfed harder, Pango is arguably being buffed relative to the field. And you could discuss whether his is the biggest nerf or not. I would defer to people who actually play the hero a lot for that, such as yourself. But from what I'm seeing in games, he still feels very impactful. So
good. Not too Love worried. Me some Pango.
Let's see. Primal Beast loses some Can damage explain, on Onslaught, in particular level 1.
Can you explain the Sand King changes? Base damage increased by 6. Strength reduced from 2.7 to 2.3. This hero's win rate has gone down. It was not picked. It was not good before, and it's worse now.
I think its win rate has gone up in higher ranks.
I don't care about higher ranks, Syndrome.
Right. Okay. So the thing about when you rebalance heroes is, I personally find the most elegant balance changes to be ones that affect all brackets. And in a positive way, I think this one is more important the higher the skill the game is, because banking one of his biggest Achilles heels in, or his single biggest one, is getting level 3 and level 5. I think this hero's laning early on is just atrocious, and giving him 6 base damage is a major help to try to get a couple of last hits and prevent himself from getting denied out of the lane. Now, he still faces the same problem where if he gets zoned, you're just fucked, right? But you have more of a chance at fighting back if you play with a strong support. The 6 damage helps you in any trade you do against other heroes. It helps you get last hits. And yeah, the strength gain nerf sucks, obviously, but comparatively, Sand King's first 5 minutes are more important than any other stretch of the game for this hero. So him being better in that range higher brackets.
Are we going to see him in pro?
I don't think it's enough. But I think it's a step in the right direction.
He was really good and really popular for about a week.
Yeah, he got over-nerfed, I would argue, in that patch.
Well, of course he did. He's garbage.
But the reason this is less significant the further down the ladder you go is people are worse at playing exploitative lane strategies. So you're not going to... The lower the skill of the game is, the higher CS Sand King will have in the first 5 minutes, and the less the 6 damage will matter, because he will float the lane and do okay. And then the second line is going to kick in more with the strength gain decrease. Because if people don't lane well and you're just farming anyway, then this is just worse after the laning stage.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a really interesting showcase of the mindset of balancing and how these lines can do a very different thing in different ranges of skill. So I think the base damage increase change is really good, but maybe it shouldn't have been 6. Maybe it should have been 4. And then instead of nerfing his strength gain this much, you could have done, I don't know, maybe just not nerfed it at all. Like, you could have just given him 4 damage and see what happens, mm-hmm. Instead of 6. But I think if you just gave him flat 6 damage and no nerf to compensate for that, that would be one of the biggest single line buffs I've seen in a long time to any hero. Maybe he deserved it. I don't know, but we'll see. Still don't think he's that good in pro.
Terrorblade, Reflection.
Sven lost an armor. Worth noticing.
Good. Terrorblade, they don't like him as support, apparently. Reflection damage decreased more so at the earlier levels. Untouched level 4. And the radius by 100 taken off, 500 to 400.
That's big. The radius nerf is really big.
So I actually did not like this hero. I'm a big Terrorblade hater anyway, I guess, but... And I love heroes being able to flex, but this one was just too weird for me. Since I did not like seeing Terrorblade as support. It's just, I don't know. Did you enjoy that at all?
Not in particular.
It felt kind of underwhelming as well. Like, wasn't exciting. I don't know.
This hero is just, as a support, he has one interesting play, and that is casting Sunder at a good moment. And we cast games of Terrorblade where it never happened.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, it wasn't particularly interesting. I completely get why the pros were running it, and it had okay success. Like, there was a lot of logic behind it, but I don't think it was particularly appealing. Obviously people will love flex picks and what it brings to the draft, and it keeps people guessing, and on a pro level it's really interesting, but I don't think it's like something you should always strive for, to make every hero flex. I think it's okay that a lot of the heroes are a little bit more specific in what they offer and are a little bit more pigeonholed. And Terrorblade becoming a support to me was also a little bit weird. So actually, just to finish off on the Sand King thing, now that I think someone in chat just mentioned this, he said the win rate of this hero was very high in Herald, which actually kind of makes this nerf or change interesting then, right? Because I was talking about it from the perspective of, you're buffing it in the higher bracket but nerfing it in the lower, and maybe that's not elegant, but it actually is. If the hero's win rate is too high in the lower range, then this is really clever, right? Because you're nerfing him in lower and buffing him in higher, which is the exact thing you want, is to try to clamp his win rate around 50 in both brackets. So I don't know if that's true, if Sand King's win rate was very, very high in Herald. It was just, if it was, I love this change suddenly a lot more than I did. So cool. Okay.
Okay. I think that's
Timber it. Got a little bit of a nerf. I personally would have liked to see it on Whirling Death, but he gets the nerf on Timber Chain damage and on reactive armor, especially level 1. Max stacks down from 15 to 12 is quite meaningful. We saw Timber saw us go 4-4-1, and that build now is worse because the reactive armor level 1 is worse, and therefore you might have to put another point in it, and that in turn delays your burst damage from the other skills, and on top of that you nerf Timber Chain. So this is a quite meaningful nerf, I would say, to the hero. I think he's still going to be popular, but I like this change overall. If it wasn't Whirling Death, then this way of nerfing the other two spells combined, I think, is pretty good, so don't mind that. Tinker gets 2 armor. Very topical for the hero. He's smoking a pipe, which is what the devs did when they did this as well. This is the weirdest change of the whole patch. Giving Tinker 2 armor and not changing the entire problem that he has right now in his kit. Laser is too bad. Like, the nerf to laser, when I saw that in the changelog, I was like, this hero's fucking
dead.
Can
I just stop you? Nobody gives a shit. Literally nobody cares if this hero ever exists again. We can move on. If they deleted him, most people would cheer. Legitimately.
Sure, okay. I mean, that's fine.
Fuck this hero.
In that case, don't give him 2 armor. Just don't change him. Just leave him.
Just leave him in the dumpster. Nobody gives a shit.
So fine. He gets two base armor and he gets more cast range on defense matrix, which is the one skill he has that didn't get nerfed and doesn't need a buff. I don't know if they're trying to, like, can this hero be a support kind of thing? No, I don't think he can, because laser sucks. The skill, I think, honestly, I'd be hard-pressed to find a bigger single nerf to a spell in history in Dota than the laser cast range going from 600 to 450. I can't remember a different spell being hit that hard.
Come on, there's got to be more.
He wasn't... The thing is, Tinker wasn't even popular in Pro Dota. He was like a niche pick being good. Picked one in maybe 100 games.
Good.
But he was a really good Smurf hero. So obviously you're trying to make the hero less appealing if people are playing outside of the skill bracket. You could argue you shouldn't solve that by nerfing heroes, but solve it by, you know, non-in-game things or inside the once the game is loaded in, you know?
My goodness. Okay, I think we can move on. This
you just hate Tinker. I get it.
This was a letter patch. But he died. Congratulations. We actually have quite a bit to talk about, and I'm not going to cut any topics today, Sindarin, just so you know.
Okay. Sure.
Okay, so that was the letter patch. Next, briefly, we'll talk about an Apex tournament that occurred.
Oh, did you? God,
I had a video playing it. So they were playing a tournament, and the pros start getting hacked, and you can see, like, they're streaming their games as well. Somebody hacked into their computers or through, like, the game. I forget what the actual exploit was, and they were cheating, literally using aimbot or wall hacks, which is the funniest shit ever. Obviously, it sucks for the people that get affected by this, but apparently cheating has been a huge problem in Apex in general, and what company is it?
I forget what
the dev is, but anyway, apparently they've had a lot of issues with cheating, and people are sick and tired of it, and they're thinking this is like bottom of the barrel. If they don't do anything at this point, then they never will. That's Respawn. Thank you, chat. So EA and Respawn. So they're getting absolutely shit on. Like, I've never heard of anything like this ever. And then they basically have to stop the tournament as a result of that temporarily. Mm-hmm. They tweeted out, due to the competitive integrity of this series being compromised, we have made a decision to postpone the NA finals at this time. We will share more information soon. And then apparently what happened, Sindarin, is they come out with another follow-up saying, following last week's events, Respawn has rolled out updates to the game. And with those protections in place, here's what you can expect from tonight's NA finals. In addition to our confidence in... This part is fucking hilarious if you just listen to it very carefully. In addition to our confidence in Respawn's fixes, we also wanted to give players additional peace of mind by hosting the ALGS NA Finals privately and broadcasting the matches after the fact. That means you are watching the result of the matches that were held privately. So they're trying to make it seem like we fixed the issue. We're very confident. But apparently not confident enough to have the live event occur. This is so crazy. This is unprecedented shit. So it sounds like probably it's not fixed. They ended up playing this offline so that they wouldn't get hacked. And that's it. That's the entire story.
So much confidence in our fix that we're taking the tournament offline. That is something.
Yeah, that was something else.
Is there a better word for this than embarrassing? I don't know. It's just fucking embarrassing, right? Like, you're running what's supposed to be one of the bigger esports in the world, and you have money out your ass as a studio for this, or at least depending on how the distribution is. But whatever, let's assume the budget is there. This is just not acceptable, right? Like, it's one thing. It's very hard to combat cheating. I understand that. It's a problem that every multiplayer game has, is that people will try to find a way to cheat. But for people to be able to hack other people through the game and then have them cheat is... I mean, what the fuck, honestly? The number one biggest... Do you remember when, I think there was a short time in Dota where you could, somebody found an exploit where you could inject SQL into text messages? Do you remember this?
Sounds familiar.
So people would write like some stuff in the chat, either in the game chat or in the global chat or whatever. And if you clicked on it, it would run a script. And Valve, obviously, this is a major security breach. It got instantly hotfixed. It's probably the most dangerous bug the game has ever had, and people will remember random game shit, right? But that one was truly dangerous. I think in a lot of situations, people did harmless and funny stuff with it for a short while it was there, like linking to an image or Rickroll or, you know, whatever. But technically, if you were good at it, you could do some really malicious shit. So that obviously got mega hotfix. And to me, this is like within the same category, just that the difference is this got literally broadcast in the finals of a tournament where players are getting hacked and you see their screens. So effectively, you're advertising the cheats on stream.
Yeah, that's...
It's fucking
never
crazy,
seen
man.
Anything like this before. Just incredible.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, the story kind of speaks for itself, right? But yeah, like you said, the comment that we have confidence in our fix and we're playing the tournament offline, just like, it's just fucking funny. I don't know if it... Did it run? I haven't really...
Yeah, they played the tournament offline, so the tournament's
okay,
over.
So it did conclude, all right.
Yes. I don't know what the updates to the actual anti-cheat are, though, if any. Probably not so great.
I guess a final question is, the people who did this, were they doing it just to fuck with the players and to... I mean, obviously, you're doing that regardless, but was the main motive behind this to disrupt the tournament, or was it to be like, okay, this is effectively us rebelling against how bad anti-cheat this game has?
It could be both, or...
Yeah.
Yeah, it's hard to tell. I don't know the actual details, but
that's something.
It
all right,
very unique, no doubt about it. I wanted to talk about Relic Arena a bit. I know some people are interested in how the development's going, and they want me to do the occasional update. I guess I mean a lot of the updates that we're doing are privately held through the Kickstarter. So if you're a Kickstarter, I think any tier, we've been posting videos every couple weeks onto, they're unlisted live streams onto YouTube, but you can watch the VOD after the fact. I know some people are still interested in Ability Arena, of course, which technically Ability Arena has been back up and running for quite a while after the whole monetization garbage that occurred. I'm not going to go into detail into that, but it's funny though. We took off monetization, so we're not making any money off Ability Arena. We're just losing money every month. Mm-hmm. And because the lawyers told us to do so, they also sent those emails to every other custom game. And guess what, Cinderin? We're almost a year after the fact now. They're all still up with monetization. Isn't that fucking unbelievable? Like, it actually makes me so fucking pissed at Valve lawyers for not just deleting their whatever. They can do whatever they want. This is why we're building our own games, so we don't have to deal with this bullshit anymore. We don't have to. You know, we have the flexibility on our side. So anyway, Relic Arena, it's going quite well. We're hoping that the alpha will start. And when I say alpha, it means it's going to be relatively scuffed. A lot of unfinished stuff. It's not going to be like, you know, these games that are early release alpha that you see are relatively polished. That's not really an alpha. This will be an actual alpha where we're going to be changing, you know, very big things all the time to see what works best, what formula works best. But it wasn't until the last few weeks that we've been able to actually like run games and test a lot of the spells that we're creating. The spells, they're taking a good amount of time because I don't remember what I've actually talked about on stream. So I guess I'll start. So
on the podcast, not very much.
So the way that it works, spells are called relics. And when you buy them in the shop, just like in Ability Arena, well, the difference is when you buy them and you equip them, the actual relic shows up on the model itself, right? So this means we have to do models for each spell, which is quite a bit of work. In addition to that, we need, of course, particles. We need animations. And one thing that we're doing that is also taking some time, which this doesn't necessarily, you know, need to be done to test stuff out, but just to give you an idea of kind of the pipeline or whatever. Every relic will have a special death animation. So if you kill somebody with, here's an example. Like we have Charge of Darkness, the equivalent. A lot of the spells are not really that close to Dota, but this one kind of is. It's the F1 rocket engine, right? You equip it, it goes on your back. You get this fucking huge engine on your back or rocket on your back. And if you kill somebody with that spell, it has a special animation for that relic specifically. So for this one, if you kill somebody with the rocket, one of two things happens. There are actually two animations for this one, which is a little unique. Number one, either the guy starts rolling, like tumbling away off screen, and actually goes into somebody else's arena randomly, just some random dead body rolls onto their arena. And then the other 50-50 is it ends up rolling out of the screen, and then it shows up on your screen, like in Smash Brothers, where it gets stuck on the physical screen and slides down.
Right.
So that's just an idea that we thought would be really cool to add a special touch to all these spells. So
that's a lot of work.
Yeah, it's a lot of work, and we're going to start doing the alpha, like I said, in about a month. We're going to cut everything down to be a four-player mode to start, because we just don't have enough spells to really do an eight-player. Mm-hmm. So that'll be roughly like 25 to 30 spells or relics. And there's one I wanted to talk about because it's hilarious, if you don't mind. I may have talked about a bit of this in the past. There's a relic called Plague Doctor Mask.
You have not talked about that.
Okay, good, because it's fucking hilarious. So Plague Doctor Mask, something goes on your head, obviously. It's the bubonic plague, like from back in the day. Has like that, you know, it's like a beak almost. But the spell itself is kind of a cross between decay and paralyzing cask, maybe. So you throw a rat at somebody, and it bounces between anybody that's close by, except it doesn't stun. It steals HP temporarily and gives it to the caster. Okay?
Okay.
And when you upgrade it, the super will become one of three things you can choose. You can lower the cooldown, because this is a spell that you can cast relatively often, like decay. You can prevent somebody, whoever's affected by the rat, from healing for a certain amount of time. Or you can have a mini stun attached, a 0.75 second stun. So it ends up actually being like paralyzing cask, right?
Right.
And then the juicy, which is what I want to kind of show on video here. Well, it's not going to show like what the spell is actually doing, but it'll show why some of these spells take so much time, because our ideas are so fucking stupid that it requires a lot of extra work. So the juicy is called Rat King. And it'll spawn a physical model next to you, okay? Animated physical model of an obese rat king that ends up shooting rats out of a cannon, basically mimicking what you're doing. So if you upgraded your, you know, to get minus two cooldown, he'll also get that. So he's just shooting these. Whenever the cooldown is up, he's shooting them as well. So it's an elaborate way of saying two charges to the spell. It's a physical model. Okay, so this is what the model looks like. There we go. I make that nice and big for everybody. So right now in the picture,
you weren't lying when you said obese.
It's a very fat rat, and he's going to be sitting in the throne on his throne.
I was just
going to
say, when
cannon.
Do you think the last time he used this throne was? It's gotta be years ago.
Yeah, the funny thing is. So the original, like, we told the model what we wanted, right? And it ended up coming out with a fat rat on this throne. And I looked at him like, he needs to be fatter. So he extended the belly quite a bit. I'm like, no, like really, like American fat. So this is what he came up
That's
with.
That's when he got it. That's when it clicked.
Yeah. And then Jenkins said, I want him to have nipple rings. So these are like just random additions that we added. So he has nipple rings here. And then I want to show a video just of the animation. So it's not showing like the spell effects or anything like that. Let me see.
So why am I not surprised Jenkins' contribution was, I want him to have nipple rings. Like, it's just...
Important. Okay, here is just the shooting animation. So you can see what it kind of looks like when the rats are coming out of the cannon.
Oh, wow, this really reminds me of King K. Rool from Donkey Kong.
Sure. I don't remember that one, but sure. And I think I have a second
video.
This is
a good animation for an alpha, though.
Explain what you're seeing on the screen for the audio listeners.
There's a cannon shooting at me and a very wobbly nipple rings and belly.
Oh, God. That's the booby animation that we have for the game. So that can be applied, of course, to our sumo wrestler as well. So that's just a short example of one relic that we have in the game right now that we're very proud of. And that the animator did an amazing job. His name is Felix. Our modeler, Will, also amazing job. And then me and Jenkins came up with the concept like complete morons. So that is the update on Relic Arena for now. So if you guys enjoyed this segment, I can bring it back every once in a while. But obviously, a lot of the details will be on the Kickstarter for the people that supported us. So yeah, that's the timetable at the moment. So we're hoping like in the next month or so, probably after Birmingham or something like that. All right, and final topic, Sindarin. This has been on the outline for over a year now. And there's a reason for that. It's because I was waiting for the next time that it occurred, which was last week for me. So there's a holiday. I'm going to butcher a little bit of this because I never knew that many of the details. But there's a New Year celebration for Persians. And, well, I shouldn't say just Persians. It's a lot of other countries celebrate this as well. But it is considered to be the Persian New Year. Which is also pronounced Noruz. It lasts for 13 days, and it's based off of the spring equinox. So the time and date differs every year. I remember as a kid, I'd be really annoyed because my mom would wake us up and sometimes be like 4 a.m., fucking dead of night, having to put on like new clothes and then get on the phone with our relatives in Iran. But I figured I'd just talk a little bit about this just to give some culture, because I remember this came from the fact that you gave some cultural talks about something in Denmark with what was it again?
Probably Christmas.
Yeah, I think it was Christmas. I think there was a couple other stories as well. Like there was one with salt, I remember.
Do you mean the stupid tradition where people throw cinnamon on people when they aren't married by 25?
Cinnamon, that's right. Salt and cinnamon, yeah. Delicious combo.
That one is not, I guess it is a tradition. It doesn't really fall in the same category.
I remember people talking about how, you know, in the YouTube comments that they enjoyed listening to other people's stories of things that they do in their countries. So I figured I'd bring this one up. So my mom used to have these yearly dinners, if you want to call it that, where she would have a group of people come into this big banquet and we would celebrate the new year and talk about what happens, like what the traditions are. And my brother did a really good talk. I'm going to steal some of his some of the stuff that he was talking about. So apparently, I never knew this, there's a character, if you want to call it that way, it's called Amu Noruz, which means Uncle New Year, essentially. And he's associated with the Persian New Year. He symbolizes the rebirth of nature and the arrival of spring. It's typically depicted as an elderly, tell me if this sounds familiar, depicted as an elderly man who brings joy and gifts to children. But the interesting
Rat King.
The interesting thing about this, though, is that this dates back to over 3,000 years ago. So Santa is based off of Amu Noruz, which I never knew. I think that's pretty cool.
Is that confirmed or?
Yes, that is. Well, that's the, most people think that that's the case.
I had no idea. I just know that Coca-Cola made him.
Yeah, Jesus was a real fan of Coca-Cola. Shout out to Cherry Coke Zero specifically.
Wait, weren't you talking about Santa?
Yeah.
Yeah, Santa is invented by Coca-Cola.
Actually?
I was not joking. Yeah, okay. I was not joking.
I'm going to ask ChatGPT this.
Okay.
Was Santa invented by Coca-Cola? Because I know it's based off of St. Nicholas, right?
Yeah.
Which,
but the character Santa Claus is Coca-Cola.
Santa Claus as a concept wasn't invented by Coca-Cola, so we're... However, Coca-Cola did play a significant role in popularizing the modern image of Santa Claus. Okay. So 50-50.
Okay. Actually, maybe
It influenced the modern portrayal of Santa, but not the character itself.
So the way I understand it is that Santa Claus, the name and the portrayal of him is largely or fully Coca-Cola, but the original character his name he's based off, isn't that Sinterklaas or something, which is... So this stuff with this is always so complicated because it's like there's the original Saint Nicholas, right? And then depending on which country you're in or whatnot, he will have a different name.
Come to your conclusion.
Now I'm unsure. I was positive that Santa Claus was a Coca-Cola invention based off of Saint Nicholas.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like they just helped modernize it, if you want to call it that, the portrayal.
Yeah.
Okay, anyway.
I did not think... Oh, whatever.
Back to non-Christian related stuff. Back to Nowruz. This isn't... So the entire period, the celebration, I guess, lasts for 13 days. There's one specific day. It is called Charshanba Suri. And it takes place the last Wednesday of the year. And typically people just get into...
So when's that?
I don't know. Every year it's different.
Wait, but it's the last Wednesday of the Gregorian calendar or...
It's the last before Nowruz itself, before the Persian New Year.
Okay, so it's in March. Okay.
Yes, typically.
Yeah.
Is there any other time that's not March? I don't know. Anyway. So the entire celebration is you jump over a bonfire. It represents you're getting rid of bad spirits for the new year kind of thing. I'm summarizing this very loosely, but I remember doing that as a kid a few times. It's a lot of fun. And then one major thing about Nowruz that every house has, and my mom does this every year, and if you look at my Instagram, I typically post, usually every year, a photo of me in front of what's called the half-seen table. It's a table that's, they all look very similar, but they have at least seven things with the letter S, which apparently symbolizes, just to summarize very quickly, a different hope or aspect of nature, like renewal, health, happiness, something like that. So on every single table in millions of homes, there is sabzi, which is basically grass. Every year you buy like this, you grow grass. And then at the end of Nowruz, which I'll get to in a minute, I'll get to that. So you have grass, okay? This little thing of grass.
Okay.
You have samanu, which is a sweet pudding made from wheat germ. You have Persian olive called senjed. You have vinegar, which is called, I don't know how to pronounce this one, sirke? I don't know. You have an apple, which is sib. Garlic, which is sear. And somar, which I think most people pronounce as sumac. So this is all on the table. There's typically a mirror, there's candles, there's painted eggs. There's always there's always a bowl of water with a goldfish in it, which symbolizes, I believe, life, which is ironic because the thing always fucking dies. So my mom stopped getting real live goldfish.
The painted eggs is a little bit interesting considering how close that is to Easter.
Yes. Right? So that is also, if I remember my brother's speech, that is also potentially inspired. Easter is inspired by, or vice versa, obviously, since this is a lot older. And then there's coins and whatnot. So on the final day of Nowruz, we never do this anymore because I hated it as a kid. You go to a park because you have to go outside, of course. It's really difficult to go outside.
Yeah.
And you can't play CS there. Yeah, you have a picnic and then you take the grass that you've grown over all this time and you put it into running water. Which, now that I'm trying to remember what that symbolizes, something. I'm sure you can look that one up. I can't remember what that actually symbolizes. So that is the TLDR of Nowruz, which is the Persian New Year. So thought people might find that interesting.
So how much of this did you do?
As a kid, very little. I think I went to like the Charshanba Suri jumping over fires maybe three times ever. And
okay.
One of them was when I was actually in Iran, which, you know, if I'm there, I'm going to be doing that stuff anyway. But most of my life has been in the U.S., so have not. But like I said, when I was living with my parents at the time, my mom would wake us up at whatever time to celebrate the actual timing of the new year. But since I've been an adult out of the house, the only thing I do is go to my mom's house for dinner on the night of the actual new year or day.
So you don't do any of the, how many S's was it on the table and stuff?
No, my brother does that in his house. Okay. My mom does it. I wouldn't mind it, but it's just, you know, a lot of work. That goldfish. Don't want to kill another goldfish. So what can he do? So yeah, that is it. We made it to an hour 20 with very little topics, mainly because you talked about the D patch for about 30 minutes somehow. Just mind boggling.
Yeah. Spent a minute and a half on Tinker. Think he deserved it this time.
I really appreciate that. So yeah, that'll do it for this week's episode. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us as always. Until next week, maybe we'll have, well, it's not going to be Crownfall. I guess, what do we have to look forward to? Okay, let me just say, I'm disappointed that there was only a letter patch, because we'll be at Birmingham, and the meta won't be that much different. Nothing was changed with High Ground.
Like, well,
that was the biggest thing, right?
Crownfall will drop before Birmingham.
Wait, is that before Birmingham?
Birmingham starts on April 22nd.
Spicy.
So there is a possibility that the teams have 1 week to adapt to stuff. But there is obviously also the possibility that the Crownfall patch does nothing gameplay-wise and is strictly event and cosmetics.
Oh, I didn't turn off the belches. Sorry about that. That was
awesome.
That was really good.
It was
good.
Bound to happen at some point. That's good.
It took an hour 20 minutes for somebody to belt.
And it wasn't even you.
Oh, now they're coming in constantly. Go ahead, Cinderette.
Yeah, I think I think there's no...
Good effort,
especially
everyone.
Considering the timing of this, I think there's a good probability that the Crownfall patch isn't a balance patch. But it's... I'm a little bit unsure because Valve, they used to do, how to say, balance patches around tournaments more so, but in the last year or two, there's been more whenever, you know, just dropping it whenever. You know, you can loot them, right?
Oh, so good, actually.
I don't even know when they're playing.
You were
talking
while I was peeing. Let's just say that.
Oh, nice. All right.
All right, sorry, this has gone off the rails. That's a big
boy. It's fine. What I will say as a final thing, what you can look forward to next episode is my recollections of the CS2 major.
Oh, yeah, that should be good.
I'm going to that tomorrow.
That's awesome.
So
take some pictures.
Yeah, I'm very bad at remembering that, just like you, but I will try.
All right, great to hear.
To take pictures.
That's great.
We are not picture people, you and I.
Yeah, I had to force myself. That's true. I'm excited for you. That's awesome. Another belch for the road? Is that in the...
Yep.
I'm not turning them off. Do what you will.
That's fine.
Is this... I can't remember. Is this the same arena that...
Yeah,
Dota
it's
will
Royal
be
Arena.
Okay.
Yeah. Cool. It's supposed to be the same. So I'm curious to see... Because I don't think I've ever been to that arena before for like a concert or anything. I'm pretty sure I've never been. So I don't know what it looks like. But obviously... Seeing something like that gives you an idea of maybe how TI could look, right? So,
yeah. Awesome. Cool. Well, until next time, Suns Fan and Sinner signing out. Peace!
Bye.
We say things that don't mean anything.
Subscribe.
Yeah.